Bible reading this morning is taken from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust nor doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
Good morning, everybody. Please have your Bibles open to where Jim just read for us. If you're using the Pew Bibles, that's on page 811. We're in Matthew chapter 6, and we're going to be going through pretty quickly the last half of that chapter. We're in the midst of a series about the Sermon on the Mount, and we only have about 2 weeks left in this series. I hope for those of you who have been a part of this, this has been beneficial to you in helping see the fullness, the fulfillment of God's will for us as Jesus laid it out in this wonderful sermon. So much content in so few words, and it still should humble us and amaze us when we read it today. But more than just read it, we should let it transform our lives. And that's really what this series is all about, being made new in light of Jesus' teachings. Today is the day where we honor our graduates, and there are few passages in the Bible. If I were to do a message just to our graduates, there's three or four that would come to mind, and Matthew 6, 19 through 34 would be one of them. It's just by coincidence with us doing this series that it worked out this way. But some of the things I am going to say today, because we are thinking about our graduates, I'm going to put in terms of our graduates and put in terms of younger children who sometime sooner than later are going to graduate, and those of us who have a big responsibility in leading them and guiding them. However, it's a message. When Jesus spoke this, he's speaking this largely to adults, and so it's to all of us, regardless of where we are in life or what age we find ourselves. When I think about where I was when I was graduating high school, it was an exciting time. Up to that point in my life, I don't know if I'd ever been so excited. I was looking forward to getting out of high school and getting on with life. At the same time, it was a nerve-wracking time, a confusing time, a time when I knew I was in the process. It's not that I had to make a big decision every day, but I was in a period of my life where I was making big decisions about who I was or who I wanted to be and what I wanted to make of my life. And our graduates and those who are in that transition period of life face those kinds of things. For me, some of those questions had to do with where was I going to go to college? What kind of career did I want after college? And based on my career choice, what was I going to major in college? And I was like a lot of college students these days, that my major changed a few times. But here's one of the main reasons why. And this is a big message to our parents and to our graduates and those who are not yet at the age of graduation. When I was a teenager, I pretty much knew what I wanted to do with my life. I knew that in some form or fashion, I wanted to teach. That was just in my heart. That's my nature. And I was always fascinated by those who taught well, and they were some of the greatest influences on my young life. I saw the power in teaching and the power in teachers. And I knew when I was just thinking to myself, that's what I was supposed to do. As I matured throughout my teenage years, I would sometimes make the mistake of telling adults what I wanted to do with my life. Because you know what a lot of those adults would tell me as an aspiring teacher? You don't want to teach. Why would you ever teach? You know what one of the first things many of these people would say to me? They don't make enough money. Now, I've told you before that if I was to make a hierarchy of people and careers that should be more highly valued in our society, teachers should be climbing that list. And they would be higher up on my list than they are in society's list. But let me also say this. I thought about that and I was like, you know what? They're right. These adults are right. I should go do something that has more prestige, that brings more respect, and makes more money. You see, I was young. I was still immature in a lot of ways. And I started to let the way the world thinks about stuff influence and determine the way Blaine thinks about stuff. And so I went off to college, and I decided to major in something quite different from teaching, because it was something that people would say, ooh, you major in that? Oh, that's, you know, that's impressive. And I did that for about 2 years, of trying to think about what Blaine needed to do to look good in the world's eyes. And then one day I finally just had a coming to Jesus moment, and it really was a coming to Jesus moment for me, where I said, you know what? This is what you're supposed to do. And you won't really be fulfilled until you do what you know you're supposed to do. And regardless of what the world thinks, regardless of what people might say, and regardless of how much money you might make. And by the way, teachers, yes, I do believe that your position should be more valued in society. But I started to think, you know, I know a lot of teachers, and they still have food on the table, and they have a house over their head, and I'll be able to do okay. Yeah, there are things I could make a lot more money and bring a lot more prestige. But I looked around and thought, you know what? Teachers weren't begging for bread, and I didn't have to either. But it took me really years to come to that conclusion that I was no longer going to let the world determine my outlook on life. And in the 16 years that has passed since that decision, I'm still learning how to not let the world determine and dictate what matters to me and how I view and approach life. And for those of you who are in this period of your life, one of the best pieces of advice I could give you is don't let the world, don't let others determine what matters to you and what is most important. And that's really what Jesus' words in Matthew 6, verses 19 through 34 in the Sermon on the Mount are all about. It's how we look at life. And what perspective are we going to have? And who or what is going to determine that perspective? Everything about the Sermon on the Mount and everything in this series that we've looked at is Jesus taking something. In Matthew 5 especially, it's times where he's talking to his Jewish audience saying, you have heard that it was said, but I want to say something new to you. I'm going to show you a better way of looking at things. When you get to chapter 6, he's no longer going to say, you have heard that it was said, but he's going to, in so many words, say, you are seeing the way things are being done. And the way things are being done, it's not working well for the world. So let me show you a different way of doing things. And here he would say, let me show you a different perspective, a different outlook on life. The first thing he's going to talk about is a new perspective on possessions. How we view money and the stuff that it buys. Jim read for us verses 19 through 21. We won't reread that, but let's pick up with verse 22. He says there, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Some translations say mammon. Mammon, the word there just means your possessions, the physical realm. But you cannot serve God and money, or God and physical possessions. Now, you read verse 24 again. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. Jesus does not make a special exemptions list to verse 24, does he? He doesn't say, you know, there's a lot of people that can't serve God and money, but you're one of the special people. You're one who's figured out how to serve two masters, how to serve both God and to serve your physical possessions. So good for you. He says, no one can do this. But you know what the world has tried to keep believing for thousands of years? That we can serve God and we can serve the physical realm and we can serve money. And it doesn't work well for them. And they know it's not working well. We might know it's not working well, but we keep trying to serve both God and money. And going back to that decision I made finally a couple years after I graduated high school, I had to decide, you know, either I need to do stuff that matters in life with a sense of priority, or I'm just going to live for physical things. And if I'm going to choose a career based on physical things, then fine, I won't be a teacher. And I'm not saying everybody has to be a teacher. And by the way, obviously I made a decision a couple years after that where I decided I wanted to stay in teaching, but a different kind of teaching. And if you thought I got grief when I said I was going to be a school teacher, imagine when I told people I was going to be a preacher. Yeah, I mean, people are like, what? But there comes a point where we have to decide, am I going to serve the spiritual realm or am I going to serve the physical realm? Because you can't serve both. You can't have two masters. But yet we keep trying to live, the world keeps trying to live with two masters in mind. A heavenly one and the earthly one. And then they wonder why they feel like their life is always in a tug of war between the physical and the spiritual. Jesus, when he says in verses 22 and 23 about the eye being the lamp of the body, you know, sometimes we read that in isolation as if Jesus is just talking about, you know, looking and thinking about stuff that is wicked or evil. I think here he's talking about looking and thinking about life from a physical or spiritual perspective. He says, if you are going to think about life through a physical lens, it will influence every decision that you make. Every time something is put before you where a choice has to be made, if you are thinking through a physical, earthly lens, a lens based on money, possessions, physical comfort, those kinds of things, you're going to make a certain set of decisions, and it's going to lead you down a certain kind of path. And sometimes that path in and of itself might not look all that bad, but you keep making those decisions, you will find yourself farther and farther away from a spiritual way of thinking and a spiritual way of living. And so when you get that single-eyed focus on things that really matter and you start to look at your possessions, you start to look at the physical realm through this lens, it changes everything. And no longer are you enslaved to the physical realm. No one can serve two masters. You are going to serve somebody. You are going to serve something. Is it going to be the physical or is it going to be the spiritual? In the passage that Jim read for us in verses 19 through 21, Jesus puts it this way. You get to lay up for yourself treasure somewhere. Just like you're going to serve somebody, you're going to have treasure somewhere. Is your treasure going to be in this realm or is your treasure going to be found in the spiritual realm? What do you invest in? Jesus is really talking in terms of investment. And not just how you use your money. You can also think about in time. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where does your time get most devoted and most spent? What is top of the food chain of your priority list? To some degree, where do your emotions get invested? The more you invest yourself, your things in something, that's what matters to you. That's where your treasure is. And so sometimes people are like, yeah, you know, this stuff over here is important to me. But when that gets taken away, they're like, well, you know, it's really not all that important. You find out what's important to you by what tugs at your heartstrings. What really matters to you, what keeps you up at night, and we'll have more to say about that in a moment. You know, there's the old adage, though, that we can't take it with us. And the stuff that matters to you, is it the stuff that you can't take with you? Or is it the stuff that will stay with you for all of eternity? By the way, I came across this picture this week on Facebook where the idea of you can't take it with you. Well, somebody, this is as hard as somebody has ever tried to take it with them. Now, you know, it is funny, but and who knows what the real situation behind this picture is, but you get the point. This isn't the way it's going to work. And there's so much stuff we are dragging behind us through this life that we are holding onto for dear life, and guess what? It's going to rust, it's going to be eaten, it's going to be stolen, it's going to be inherited by somebody else who then will sell it to somebody you don't even know. You know what all that stuff matters to? Nothing. Nothing. It's all temporary. I did the blog a couple weeks ago about a man in China who took his life savings. He didn't trust the local bank. And so what did he do? He took his money and he buried it in the ground. That sounds like a biblical story, doesn't it? You know what happened? The worms and the bugs ate a lot of it. Now that's sort of sad and tragic, but in some ways, you know what? That's the way it goes. That's what's going to happen to all of our stuff. It's not going to be ours. And so, does that have a hold on us? Or does the heavenly stuff, is that where we're investing ourselves? The next kind of perspective connected to this, Jesus talks about, is the perspective on our problems. Here's what he says in verse 25. Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? What shall we eat, what shall we drink, what shall we wear? Jesus revisits that question more than once in this section. I've always found it interesting that Jesus does not say if we shall eat and if we shall drink and if we shall wear. It's what shall we eat, what shall we drink, and what shall we wear. He was talking to commoners in his day and time, and commoners in his day and time were not as well off as commoners in 21st century America. In his prayer that we talked about 2 weeks ago, he says, give us this day our daily bread. Give us the bread that we need for today. When he says, what shall we eat and what shall we drink? He's talking to people who, even though they might not have had a lot, they still got to choose what they were going to eat. They still got to choose what they were going to wear. And if you have that choice, guess what? Life's good. At least it should be good. But we get caught up worrying about all this stuff that one, we might have no control over in the first place, or two, we never know what's going to happen down the road. How many times do we worry about a future that is just completely uncertain? In verse 34, he says, therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Don't borrow trouble, is how my mom always told me. Let's live in today. I've got this 7-year-old who likes to think about the future. And she's always asking me about later today, or tomorrow, or next week, or next year. She's like that because she came from my DNA. Because that's the way I am. And I have had to teach myself over and over and over again, here is today. Let's take care of today. And there are so many times when we worry about stuff that doesn't really matter. And you know what else happens in the process? The stuff that does matter doesn't get our attention. There are some legitimate things to be concerned about in life. There are some things that sometimes we need to do something about. There are things that are actually within our control. Usually those things have nothing to do with anything outside of self. They're usually things going on inside of me. Those are the things that I can control, and those are the things that I need to address. But a lot of this external stuff, that's outside of my control. But if I get worried about all this external stuff, I can ignore and avoid the more important stuff. Or if I'm thinking about what's happening down the road, I can say, well, you know, let's push aside what needs to take place today. Jesus says, let's live for today. Jesus isn't condemning thinking ahead or planning. But he is condemning the idea of allowing our attachment to this physical world. And again, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? To consume our anxieties, our emotion, our energy. And the reason why we get worried about that stuff is, again, we're letting the world dictate to us what matters. We wouldn't worry so much if we said, you know what, here's what the world's thinking about, here's what the world's worried about. I'm going to live in my own space over here and think about stuff that really matters. And all of a sudden that provides a clarity and a perspective that nothing else can. Perspective on our problems. And a lot of times the things that we think are problems or the things that people tell us are problems, you know what we find out? They're really not problems at all. It brings us to our final perspective. Jesus says in Matthew 6, 32 and 33, "For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." If there was ever a verse to know in the Bible, Matthew 6:33 might be it. "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Jesus gives us a perspective on our priorities. What matters most to us? When he was talking about those things people worry about, he gives a few just awesome examples of how birds, you know, birds have a way of being provided for and taken care of. And you know what? They didn't really even work for those things. God has just designed things to look after them. And the lilies of the field, you know, they just sprout up because that's the way God has made things. If God is able to do awesome things like provide for the birds of the air and the lilies of the field, don't you think he can take care of us? And if that's the case, shouldn't we be able to trust him with the stuff that matters most in our lives? What matters most to us? What kingdom are we living under? What kingdom are we serving? And I'm not talking about an earthly kingdom like the United States. I'm talking about your own personal kingdom, my own personal kingdom. Am I living for the kingdom of Blaine? What makes Blaine happy? What makes Blaine comfortable? Am I living for the kingdom of the American dream? Of, you know, this is the kind of life everybody tells me I need to be living for. Those of you who are graduating high school, am I letting the world set my priorities for me? And if we allow the world to set our priorities for us, guess what kind of result, what kind of product we're going to get? One that looks like the world. Jesus says in verse 32, "These are the things the Gentiles seek." What kind of insult do you think that would have been to a Jewish audience? You have let the Gentile world set your priorities. If Jesus was here today, I think he would say the same thing. He might not use the word Gentile, but he would say to us, you talk about the stuff that's going on in the unbelieving world. You've let that world set your priorities for you. You're not seeking God's kingdom first. You're seeking that kingdom first. You're seeking your kingdom first. That kingdom could be prestige. It could be popularity. It could be beauty. It could be money. He says, seek God's kingdom first. I've said it over and over and over again. I'm going to keep saying it. It might not be a popular message. But for those of us with children still at home, and those who are graduating, they're now entering this transition phase where they're making their decisions for themselves now. The priorities we set in our homes will largely determine the priorities our children live with as they reach adulthood. And if we keep letting the world set our families and our children's priorities, we shouldn't be surprised when our children end up living and looking and being drawn to the world. That is just logic. You don't even need the Bible to tell you that. There's a website. Now, I do not think that this particular article is funny. It's actually really sad. There's a website right now that's getting a lot of attention in Christian circles called the Babylon Bee. It is a satirical Christian website. It's not real. It's to make a point, sometimes in a humorous way. A popular one this past week is that Benny Hinn miraculously removes lump from woman's purse. Think about that for a moment. That's the kind of stuff they write about, okay? This one article has to do with a family. Again, it's fictitious, but it tells a story. It says, local father Trevor Mickelson and his wife Carrie are reeling after discovering that after 12 years of steadily taking their daughter Janie to church every Sunday, they didn't have a more pressing sporting commitment. She no longer demonstrates the strong, occasional commitment to the faith in which they raised her. Now, that's not funny. It's meant to be funny. It's not funny. And it's not funny because it's telling the story of young people in the United States today and faith. It goes on to say some other things to try to be funny. It's not funny. It's tragic. We are letting the world dictate to us our priorities. And when we do, we will get the world's results. It is not easy to be different. It is not easy to go against the grain. It is not easy to say, I am going to make a certain set of decisions because God's kingdom matters more to me than anybody else's kingdom. It's difficult to say, you know what? My child might not be the most popular at school. My family might not be the most popular in the community. We might not be the most successful in the world's eyes. People might think we're weird and strange, but God's righteousness comes first. Are we willing to live with that? And how do we define success? Do we define success by the way the world perceives us or by the way God knows us? And by the way, the world perceives us, that is an always changing thing. The world is always evolving as to what matters to it. But the things that matter to God, they remain constant. And that life is a lot more secure. Which one matters to us? Now, this passage is pretty plain to understand. It's not easy to live. There's a difference between simple and easy. And as I've said in the past, as Jesus was delivering this sermon, I'm sure there were people who thought to themselves, he can't really mean this. You know, no one can serve two masters. Come on. You know, Jesus came across a man that we call the rich fool. Jesus told him, you want to find out what matters to you? Take everything that you have and sell it. Give that to the poor, and then you come follow me. People say, that's extreme. Yeah, it was extreme. You know why Jesus asked that man to do that? Because he wanted to show that man what really mattered to him. That man was probably living under the delusion that, yeah, I'm good with God. Jesus said, no, this is really what matters to you. And if Jesus were to come to us and say, give this up, it might not be money for you, might be. Give this up and come follow me. Would we be willing to do it? Because he comes first. You know, every week when we offer the invitation, that's ultimately what we're asking. What matters most to us? Is it following Jesus or following the world? And not just having his forgiveness of sins as a token to hold on to while we follow the world, but to sell out and give ourselves completely to the Lord and his priorities. And so this morning as we sing this invitation song, that's the question. What matters most to us? The kingdoms of this earth or the kingdom of heaven? If you need to come to Jesus in any way, please do so while we stand and sing.